Back on the Gas House, gang. I said we were going to put these comments up here. I don't know what got into everybody today, but boy, they are going wild on the comments. Matt says he especially loves that we're getting new heroes almost daily. I love when a team has so many contributors. I agree with that, too. There isn't one guy that you're leaning on right now with this Cardinals team. There's one after the other after the other. Lauren, can't wait to see the game this coming Monday. Good for you. They are going to be taking on Cleveland. It's fun. It's fun right now. With Chris Ranji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd are our producers. And joining us in studio is the award-winning author, I would say one of our foremost baseball historians in St. Louis, if not the top, and that would be Ed Wheatley, joining us in studio on KMOX's Gas House Gang. You know about the Gas House
Gang,
don't you?
Listen to it. Yeah, you got to know about it in St. Louis if you want to know anything about sports.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. And you know, we stole the name from tell us about the Gas House Gang. Actually, the first world champions.
No.
Well, you know what I mean.
They the came in the era. 30s.
The
26
the first,
was
26
the,
and 31, but the first era.
I always tell people that they are a team that America fell in love with. It was during the Depression, and you know, there wasn't much else to do cuz things weren't very good during the Depression of those early 30s. And with this radio station KMOX beaming across the country, that's what people listen to, the Cardinals. And here was this group of Cardinals, Dizzy Dean, Dizzy, The Lip, Ducky, I mean, you know, Pepper, all these crazy names. And, you know, up in New York, there was this stoic team, the Yankees, who had been winning in the 20s and early 30s, too, in their beautiful white pinstriped outfits. And here was this group of knucklehead baseball players, baggy, dirty uniforms. If you watch the films, and people would get, you know, if they went to the movie theater, the movie charts, they would show these clips of the Gas House Gang Cardinals, because remember they would do all the shenanigans playing Pepper, mm-hmm. or they would had the under the legs, over the back, these rituals they would do, and people fell in love with it. And you know, they were also playing instruments with the Wabash Cannonball and all this. So this was a team that America identified with, and because of KMOX strength of signal, the nation fell in love with them. And then you had, you know, the biggest mouthpiece of baseball at the time, Dizzy Dean. And you know, his 30 wins there in 34, another World Series, and how they went with the Tigers. And you remember the fans were throwing everything from fruit and vegetables and beer bottles at Joe Medwick in Game 7. They had to take him out of the game to protect him. So it was, there was all this stuff about him. It was fun.
What a crazy time that had. Can you
throw in fruit and beer bottles
at the left fielder?
Beer bottle, yeah. Okay.
It was out to touch. He had slid pretty hard into the third baseman.
Yeah.
But that was Ducky Medwick style.
Yeah. The Cardinals won in 26, in 31, and 34.
Correct. And then they were also they won the pennant and lost in 28 and 30.
And, of course, they won that first world championship when Babe Ruth tried to take second and got thrown out. End of series.
It was series. And that's I tell that story in my newest book on one of the iconic gloves, a throw, a catch, a tag, and a world championship, where Bob O'Farrell threw to Roger Hornsby in his Bill Doak glove, tags Babe Ruth stealing second base, seventh game of the World Series in Yankee Stadium, two outs, you're down by a run. But I went and I found all the interviews in the clubhouse right after the game. Babe, what the heck, you know, how do you get thrown? Grover Cleveland Alexander had won Game 2 and Game 6, and everybody knows how Grover Cleveland went down and kind of rested in the bullpen hanging over from the night before, because he figured, I'm not going to pitch again. I've won my two games. Bob Haynes develops blisters on his pitching fingers from his throwing, and Alexander came in with the bases loaded in the eighth inning. Tony Lazzara, one of the most dangerous hitters in the American League, he strikes Lazzara out. And he comes in to pitch. Cardinals walk the first two guys because they're protecting this one-run lead. And they walk Ruth. Ruth's on base. Ruth was not the big, heavy, fat guy that people think. He was like a washboard in his stomach in these days. And you know, he was fast, and he had an amazing arm. But he said, with the way Alexander is hitting, Bob Musil, who's now as bad, he's a good hitter, he's probably not going to get much of a hit that I can score from first base. But if I could surprise him and steals second and he gets a hit, I might tie the game. That's why Ruth did it. And, you know, if you look at it in that context, it wasn't what the fallacy that everybody kind of think, oh, Ruth was thrown out, giving the Cardinals their first World Series win 100 years ago this year.
So do we talk about him being a fat guy because of the hot dogs?
You know, he was a big guy, some of the hot dogs, the beer. Yeah. He inhibed later on. But, you know, Ruth was a big guy, first of all. And he had those thin legs. You know, he didn't have these muscular legs. But and the biggest thing is the photography, the video of those days was not smooth. It was choppy, and it made things always look a little bit turd. But go look at that 27 Yankees and look at him and Gehrig and how big and lean they are. I mean, you got to remember, he was one of the greatest pitchers of his era and still of baseball.
The book is The Finest in the Field, A History of Baseball Through 50 Iconic Gloves. Mm-hmm. You just made mention of it when you told that story about the 26 World Series. How did you come up with this idea to celebrate America's pastime?
Well, I was working with, I've been doing some things with Rawlings, and they came and they said, you know, let's, won these awards for these different coffee tables. We'd love to have a coffee table book. So working with the Rawlings crew, we came up back and forth with ideas, and it was starting out. It starts out everybody's love of the game. Everybody, as soon as they start talking, they'll tell you immediately, well, my first glove was this, and, you know, where I got it, how. And so I actually opened up the book with asking all these Gold Glove Hall of Famers, what was your first book? How'd you get your first glove? Where'd you get it? Like Johnny Bench. You know, he had to spend a summer picking cotton, you know, and that's how he got his first book. Go ahead.
You know what's amazing is you just asked that question, and I'm thinking about it. I don't remember my first, but I remember my second, and I had stolen it from my uncle. It was a softball glove, and that's just what I used. Yeah. I used that in Little League for, I mean, I don't know how long. And I imagine a lot of people, especially in our age range, who grew up decades ago, have stories like that.
Oh, yeah.
Now it feels like, oh, let's go to the store and let's go to the baseball store and buy the perfect baseball glove right now because you're on a traveling team. It's a little bit different than the way it used to be.
Well, you're absolutely right. And not only is it, what was your first glove? How did you form the pocket? Did you use Vaseline, lanolin, shaving cream, whatever? Did you tie it? How did you sleep on it? And so all these guys are giving me
stories. Drive over it with a car?
Yeah. You know, so these Hall of Famers are telling us how they got their glove so that the reader all of a sudden buys in. I did it like Nolan Arenado. I did it like Ozzie. Ozzie, he didn't have a glove at first. He made a glove that he could throw and catch balls off the steps from a paper bag. And then he found eventually outside a rec center a glove that obviously was a trapeze model, had been out in the rain, and that's led him to all his greatness. Starting with a glove that was a paper bag.
Wow.
And so you go into them and you buy in. I did it just like so-and-so, Brooks Robinson, whoever. And then we go into the evolution of the game, how it evolved and went across America. And, you know, the first 10 years, this is also the 150th anniversary of Major League Baseball. 1876, it was formed, the National League. And up until the late 1880s, they didn't wear gloves. And the rules were different. And then gloves came in. Rawlings put that first patent. And the first glove did not even cover the fingers. It was just the palm. It was for protection, not for catching. And the old saying that your coaches and dad instilled on you, use two hands. One hand stopped it. The other hand held it. And that's where it really all began. And then we go through the evolution of the glove, how it changed the rules in the game. Those first decade and a half of Major League Baseball, fly ball, bounce, center fielder catches it, it's an out. You could catch it or not. So there's all these rules that come in once the glove. Pitchers originally threw slightly underhand with a locked arm, kind of like throwing horseshoes. And once the catcher had a glove, he could add speed, you could throw overhand. So we go into all how the glove changed baseball and all the different rules. And then from there, I had all the Rawlings advertisements going back from the 1880s all the way up to today. So you could find your glove, whether it was the six-finger trapeze, the Mickey Mantle model, whatever one, there it is in the catalog. That was only $8. You know, you could see the prices and just go back memories. Then we go in, we picked 50 of the greatest moments in baseball history, like Willie Mays over the head catch, 1954 World Series in the Polo Ground. Everybody knows that. There's the glove.
Wow.
Got it. The Hall of Fame was all in on this. And everybody, a lot of the Major League Baseball teams were all in on this. What do you want? Who do you need? Mickey Mantle's long, long, long run in the 56 World Series into Death Valley at Yankee Stadium to make that backhanded catch that saved Don Larson's perfect game. There's his glove. So we build these stories, and some of them are moments in a game. Some of them are parts of a career, but there's the actual gloves, you know. And just it's just like, you know, as we said, people, you'd say you're working on a glove. Well, my glove was it's the memory and the connections. Like, you know, Nolan Arenado was telling me he got his first glove. His dad was a black model, a Derek Jeter, and he went home. He said, "No, you're not going. We got to make sure your name and your phone number's in it." Well, about six times, people called and says, "I think I got a Nolan Arenado glove that belongs at your house." So, I mean, there's those kind of stories, and you know, they're all pretty heartfelt. And we go all the way up to the big dumper, Cal Raleigh last year, and his
should have won MVP.
He should have,
yeah.
But it's great. And quick. He saw a copy of the book a couple months ago. He was in town at Rawlings getting his equipment updated in some things. And he was looking at the book and, "Oh, wow, this is great. Look at these legends, these stories." Keep looking. "What the?" Blank. "I mean, how did?" Well, you know, he had a career year that was deserving. He had been the previous year's Platinum Glove winner. So defense gift. He earned the defense. And then he had the stories. He had to be in there.
Can you imagine finding out that you're in that collection? The finest in the field of history of baseball through 50 iconic gloves. Ed Wheatley is with us. Hang tight. We're going to talk to him a little bit more. Also, I want to hear about the developments of the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I think there's some good stuff going there, and you've taken control of that. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more. It's the Gas House Gang on KMOX right after this. Welcome back. Gas House Gang on KMOX. They're all commenting about Ed Wheatley. Eline says he'd love to hear you talk about wrestling at the Chase one day. Lawrence is asking, is the book out in stores or on Amazon yet? The book is The Finest in the Field, a History of Baseball Through 50 Iconic Gloves. Is it out?
It's out everywhere, online, book and mortar. If you really want to, we'll be next Tuesday. We'll be out at St. Louis County Library Author Series, 7 o'clock, right across the street on Lindbergh from Frontenac Plaza. Derek Gould and I, the Cardinal beat writer for the Post, he and I are going to do a conversation. We'll have books available there. And the following Saturday, the 18th, Ozzie Smith and I will be at the Rawlings Experience signing. So there's lots of opportunities. You can always pick it up in Rawlings, but anywhere you want, it's there.
Wow, that's awesome. Craig says he flipped through the book a few days ago, said it looks great, Ed. So thank you for that, Craig.
Thanks.
You know, thinking about gloves, I remember my first glove, but I really remember my dad's. And my dad gave me his, and I still have it. And it's like pale yellow in color, you know, and it's so soft and broken in. And it's a Rawlings glove from way, way back. And it got me thinking, because I have some memorabilia. I'm not a huge memorabilia collector, but I have, you know, this signed ball or that I think would look good. We had an old seat from Sportsman's Park that we put in. I donated it in my dad's memory in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. You can see it at the Cardinals Hall of Fame and Museum when you first walk in on your right, the Sportsman's Park display. But it got me thinking, I'll bet you that you could put together a Hall of Fame of memorabilia based on what people in St. Louis have. I'd put St. Louis, especially in the area of baseball, but in all sports, up against pretty much any city when it comes to sports memorabilia and people holding on to some very special things. And it got me thinking about the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame and how that could all work together.
Well, yeah, it's just this morning I was going through a gentleman forwarded for Browns. We get things all the time. The St. Louis Browns, they know that we're preserving the Browns, like, you know, it's credit to St. Louis, as you spoke a moment ago. You know, there's nothing for the Boston Braves, Brooklyn Dodgers, New York Giants, Philadelphia A's, but here in St. Louis, We will have an annual luncheon once more with over 350 people remembering the St. Louis Browns. We'll sell out the Grizzlies again with our Browns night where we dress them up in a particular year and honor a player from the team. St. Louis has that love, and with that love is memorabilia. And there's memorabilia all over this because, you know, and I've written a book saying we are the best sports town in America because of the diversity of the sports, the diversity of the athletes themselves, and the diversity of what began in sports here. You look at all the trophies that came out of St. Louis, you know, that you talk about the New York and the Heisman up at the New York Athletic Club. The Missouri Athletic Club does the Herman Awards and does the Oscar Robinson Awards, you know, for both the best college male and female soccer and basketball players. You know, then there was the Walker Cup, the Davis Cup, the Singfield Cup. It all comes with their origins here, and it's all history. And as a part of that, you know, we've had displays here and there, and we still do, but we're announcing that we're going to be a partner of the MAC, the Missouri Athletic Club, with the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame, where we have our regular induction dinners and many, many events. We got some events that we'll be announcing shortly tied to the World Cup there. But we're going to have the opportunity so people can relive and see this memory and go back. And, you know, whether it was a Stan Musial glove, an Ozzie Smith glove, is it the putter that Bob Golby won at Masters, as we talk about this this weekend, or Jackie Joyner Kersee, her uniforms and outfits. So we have all these things, and it's going to be special.
Wow. The reverence that people seem to have over some of these award ceremonies you're talking about, you know, the Stan Musial Awards, the amount of nationwide celebrities that show up for that, or the college basketball stuff where, you know, I had done a show there the last time I had done a show there was when right before Zion Williamson was drafted, and he was there. And I think Tony Bennett had just won a national title, and he was there. So everybody was there. Why do those things, you think, still carry weight when it seems like to the rest of the country, St. Louis is an afterthought?
Well, I think two things. One, sports is our true brand of St. Louis. You know, we were a river town. We were a beer town. We auto producer town. We were airplanes and spacecraft. But throughout all the decades, the centuries, our success, our first in St. Louis sports, is something that other cities look at us by. That's our beacon. Is our sports. And you know, downtown may not be what it was 10 years ago, but people flock. You know, you think about what we had. Football with the Battle Hawks, and you had the hockey, and you had the Cardinals all playing on the same day. We fill up people. It's sports that is the blood. It's the thing that you can walk in, as you were speaking a little bit earlier on your show. You know, you can be at the grocery store, at the bank, and somebody said, "Did you see you know Church last? What he did last night?" I mean, people will talk. It's a breaker that, you know, keeps people together. So. People, I get calls about, like, last year, Babe Ruth's grandson, I brought him in. We're going to bring in Yogi Berra's granddaughter and son for a day on Yogi Berra here on June 17th at the MAC. And it's the memories. It's that feel-good moments that were feel-good parts of your life. Going back to what in the previous segment where we talked about the Cardinals and the Gas House Gang, they were kind of an opium for the depression. All these people, they were living in their shanties and that, but they're all huddled around a radio, and who are they listening to? KMOX and the St. Louis Cardinals and the antics of Dizzy Dean. That is the memories that gets passed down. And then it was Stan Musial, then, you know, Ozzie Smith, you know, Pujols, and who's it going to be of these young kids now? Who's going to be the one? Every night it's a new one.
I love this. And to Ronge's point, we had Zion Williamson, we had Bill Walton, we had Dick Vitale last year at our event, the USBWA Awards, and on Monday, Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
Is going to get the Dean Smith Award at the MAC. I mean, it's awesome, the people that come rolling through here. So, once again, the book is The Finest in the Field, A History of Baseball Through 50 Iconic Gloves. Tell us again where people can get it.
You can get it at any bookstore, any online segment. If you want to come out, hear a good backdrop story in depth Tuesday night at the St. Louis County Library headquarters on Lindbergh across from Frontenac, or come visit us next Saturday out at the Experience. Ozzie Smith and I will be there. He's a Hall of Famer, Gold Glover. He's owned 13 of them, and he's in the book. Yeah, so come out and see us.
Ed, great job. Really, really nice. Ed Wheatley with us.